Perryvale St. Andrews lies between two Middlesex hills, half climbing the northern one. It is an almost smokeless town of white walls, roofs of narrow green slates or red tiles, tall trees, domes, campaniles, and slender chimney shafts, beautifully situated and beautiful in itself. The best view of it is obtained from the crest of a slope about half a mile to the east, where the high explosives are dealt with. The foundry lies hidden in the depths between, the tops of its chimneys sprouting like huge bowling pins into the middle distance. Across the crest runs a platform of concrete with a parapet which suggests a fortification, because there is a huge cannon of the obsolete Woolwich Infant pattern peering across it at the town. The cannon is mounted on an experimental gun carriage, possibly the original model of the undershaft disappearing rampart gun alluded to by Stephen. The parapet has a high step inside, which serves as a seat. Barbara is leaning over the parapet, looking towards the town. On her right is the cannon. On her left, the end of a shed raised on piles, with a ladder of three or four steps up to the door, which opens outwards and has a little wooden landing at the threshold, with a fire bucket in the corner of the landing. The parapet stops short of the shed, leaving a gap which is the beginning of the path down the hill through the foundry to the town. Behind the cannon is a trolley carrying a huge conical bombshell with a red band painted on it. Further from the parapet, on the same side, is a deck chair near the door of an office which, like the sheds, is of the lightest possible construction. Cousins arrives by the path from the town.
Well,
not a ray of hope. Everything is perfect, wonderful, real. It only needs a cathedral to be a heavenly city instead of a hellish one.
Have you found out whether they have done anything for old Peter Shirley?
They have found him a job as a gatekeeper and timekeeper. He's frightfully miserable. He calls the timekeeping brainwork and says he isn't used to it. And his gate lodge is so splendid that he's ashamed to use the rooms and skulks in the scullery.
Poor Peter.
Stephen arrives from the town carrying a field glass.
Have you two seen this place? Why did you leave us?
I wanted to see everything I was not intended to see, and Barbara wanted to make the men talk.
Have you found anything discreditable?
No. They call him Dandy Andy and are proud of his being a cunning old rascal, but it's all horribly, frightfully, immorally, unanswerably perfect.
Sarah arrives and crosses to the trolley and sits down on the shell.
Heavens, what a place! Did you see the nursing home?
Did you see the libraries and schools?
Did you see the ballroom and the banqueting chamber and the town hall?
Have you gone into the insurance fund, the pension fund, the building society, the various applications of cooperation?
Undershaft comes from the office with a sheaf of telegrams in his hand.
Ah, have you seen everything? I'm sorry I was called away.
Undershaft indicates the telegrams.
News from Manchuria.
Good news, I hope.
Very.
Another Japanese victory.
Oh, I don't know. Which side wins does not concern us here. No, the good news is that the aerial battleship is a tremendous success. At the first trial, it has wiped out a fort with 300 soldiers in it.
Dummy soldiers?
No, the real thing.
Cousins and Barbara exchange glances. Then Cousin sits on the step and buries his face in his hands. Barbara gravely lays her hand on his shoulder, and he looks up at her in a sort of whimsical desperation.
Well, Stephen, what do you think of the place?
Oh, magnificent. A perfect triumph of organization. Frankly, my dear father, I have been a fool. I had no idea what it all meant. Of the wonderful forethought, the power of organization, the administrative capacity, the financial genius, the colossal capital it represents. I have been repeating to myself as I came through your streets, peace hath her victories no less renowned than war. I have only one misgiving about it all.
Out with it.
Well, I cannot help thinking that all this provision for every want of your workmen may sap their independence and weaken their sense of responsibility. And greatly as we enjoyed our tea at that splendid restaurant, how they gave us all that luxury and cake and jam and cream for threepence, I really cannot imagine. Still, you must remember that restaurants break up home life. Look at the continent, for instance. Are you sure so much pampering is really good for the men's characters?
Well, you see, my dear boy, when you are organizing civilization, you have to make up your mind whether trouble and anxiety are good things or not. If you decide that they are, then I take it you simply don't organize civilization. And there you are, with trouble and anxiety enough to make us all angels. But if you decide the other way, you may as well go through with it. However, Stephen, our characters are safe here. A sufficient dose of anxiety is always provided by the fact that we may be blown to smithereens at any moment.
By the way, Papa, where do you make the explosives?
Oh, in separate little sheds like that one. When one of them blows up, it costs very little, and only the people quite close to it are killed.
Stephen, who is quite close to it, looks at it rather scaredly and moves away quickly to the cannon. At the same moment, the door of the shed is thrown abruptly open, and Bilton, a foreman in overalls and list slippers, comes out on the little landing and holds the door open for Lomax, who appears in the doorway.
My good fellow, you needn't get into a state of nerves. Nothing's going to happen to you, and I suppose it wouldn't be the end of the world if anything did. A little British pluck is what you want, old chap.
Lomax descends and strolls across to Sarah.
Anything wrong, Bilton?
Gentleman walked into the high explosives shed and lit a cigarette, sir, that's all.
Ah, quite so. Do you happen to remember what you did with the match, Mr. Lomax?
Oh, come. I'm not a fool. I took jolly good care to blow it out before I chucked it away.
Top of it was red hot inside, sir.
Well, I suppose it was. I didn't chuck it into any of your messes.
Think no more of it, Mr. Lomax. By the way, would you mind lending me your matches?
Certainly.
Lomax offers his box, undershaft pockets the matches.
Thanks.
You know, these high explosives don't go off like gunpowder, except when they're in a gun. When they're spread loose, you could put a match to them without the least risk. They just burn quietly like a bit of paper. Did you know that, undershaft? Have you ever tried?
Not on a large scale, Mr. Lomax. Bilton will give you a sample of gun cotton when you are leaving, if you ask him. You can experiment with it at home.
Bilton looks puzzled.
Bilton will do nothing of the sort, Papa. I suppose it's your business to blow up the Russians and Japs, but you might really stop short of blowing up poor Charlie.
Bilton gives it up and retires into the shed. Lomax sits beside Sarah on the shell.
My Onist, there's no danger.